So you want to make sure that any sensor that you pick is going to allow you to use your data and kind of harness it and use it to the most effect and create the most value.
SwineNet. It's time for a new era of communication in the swine industry, one that you can get the latest updates while commuting or driving to farms. Here, you will have the brightest minds of the global swine industry in your pocket. We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible. FeedFlow. Feed is too expensive to ignore. Take control with FeedFlow. AB Vista. New nutritional perspectives and novel enzyme applications to drive pig production. Anatox. Research shows that feed sanitizers reduce the onset of viruses in commercial swine feed. Improve swine productivity through powerful pathogen control with Anatox today. Adiseo provides programs and services to help producers achieve their targets in a high-quality, safe, and sustainable way. Healthy Farms by Bioverse, your manure management experts.
Hello, and welcome to the SwineNet podcast. I'm Dr. Tara Donovan, your host today, and I have with me Casey Forsythe. Casey is the CEO of FeedFlow. Welcome to our show, Casey.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Great. So today we're going to talk about something I just learned about preparing for this podcast, interoperability. But before we do that, Casey, could you give us a quick introduction of yourself, kind of your career history, your experience?
Yeah. So I'm a computer scientist by training. So I really start off for like a passion about technology and wanting to put that into useful ways into the world. And what I did for the last 10 years is I was essentially an inventor for hire. So I would do different types of projects like in the healthcare space and in the agriculture space, really inventing new technologies based on what people were telling me the problems were in their industry. And as I developed those technologies, one of them, FeedFlow, became a going concern and we got really excited about it. And so I left that kind of inventor for hire job and I became the CEO of FeedFlow and I've been doing that ever since.
Great. Thank you for that. And so just tell us a little bit about FeedFlow and, you know, what you've been working on before we get started on kind of understanding how that product can be integrated into our business.
Yeah, definitely. So FeedFlow is this sensor that goes on top of your 3-inch flex auger, and it measures how many pounds or kilograms of feed are traveling through the pipe. And so what we do with that data for producers is we look for equipment problems in their barn to make sure their pigs always have access to feed. We automate feed deliveries, and then we can even be looking for signals for illness outbreaks. So if there's a drop in consumption, we can make sure people are getting on top of that problem really quickly.
Yeah, perfect. So since some of our listeners might just be listening and not be watching the podcast, so Casey showed an example of the device that goes on top of the feed flow or the pipe. And so they also have a really good website. You can jump on onto their website or Google FeedFlow and you'll find it so you can see the device. So now we're going to jump into that word that I didn't really understand or know about. It was called interoperability. And I think that's intriguing to talk about because that's a bit of a, I wouldn't say issue, but a challenge with these types of systems to integrate into all of our other data, right, that's coming into a barn. So first, tell us about interoperability. What is it?
Yeah, so interoperability is really the ability for a product to connect to other products or components and make a larger system. So you could think of a product as being designed either to support interoperability or rather to be proprietary and be closed instead.
All right. So give me an example of give me an example of an interoperable system, I guess.
Yeah. So I like to think of technology very broadly and not just being about like smartphones and televisions. So one of the technologies that I think about that's really interoperable in the swine industry is the actual feeding systems that we use today. So the flex auger systems that have been around since the 60s are a great example of an interoperable system that uses lots of different pieces of technology. So for instance, the motors that we use are very similar to, they essentially connect into to the auger and the flighting. And you could think of the way that the bolt pattern on the motors are set up and the shaft of the motor as being like an interface that connects to another piece of the system. And so that lets you go get a motor from a different manufacturer, a different supplier, and still have everything all work together.
Right, which I think is really important in this system because I've been in a lot of pig barns and the motors aren't the same and the systems really just, you know, they're different, right, from different areas of the country, Canada, you know, where you're based out of versus the U.S. versus, you know, even other countries that, you know, would have this this technology that might be beneficial. Mm-hmm.
Feed flow is changing the way the swine industry sees feed. As the world's only on-pipe feed sensor, FeedFlow tells you exactly how much feed is being delivered to your animals, so you can be sure that every pig in your barn is well-fed and growing. With industry-leading precision and up-to-the-minute real-time data and alerts, FeedFlow is a simple and affordable way to improve production outcomes across your organization. Feed is too expensive to ignore. Try FeedFlow today.
So one example I'm going to share with the group that I thought was interesting, a take home for me was that Casey mentioned that, you know, an interoperable system like Gmail can connect with Yahoo, which can connect with other email users. And so it has to be adaptable, right, to be able to use. And I can send you an email from, you know, your company on my Gmail account, and you can send something on, you know, your corporate account, right? So that's a system that works together.
Yeah, email is a fantastic example. And it's really an example of a communications technology that wouldn't have gone as far and been as useful to people if it hadn't been for open standards and making systems interoperable.
Right. So one question about this type of system, right? So it's a sensor that's on a feed auger, and it's able to, like you mentioned, detect the feed flow, right? So it can send perhaps a warning when there's no feed flow, right, for feed outages. And so tell us a little bit about how that would work for me.
So the sensor is actually able to see how much feed is in the pipe. And so when we notice that a system is starting to run empty, we start a timer and we know how large the feeders are in a barn. And so we wait a little while because we don't want to send a notification every time a feeder or every time a feed line just starts to run empty. And so what we do is we wait until we know that the feeders are about to run out. And then we let a staff member know that there's an opportunity to fix something before it affects the animals.
Right. So is that alert, I guess, sent to like the staff member by a text, or how does that happen? How does that work, that communication flow?
Yeah. So we can use text messages, we can use email, and then we also have a mobile app that gives kind of a bigger picture about what's going on at the barn.
No, perfect. That's great. And so you mentioned that, you know, it can perhaps determine the amount of feed going through. Can you determine if pigs are eating less and maybe perhaps getting sick?
Yeah, exactly. So by being able to look at that consumption information, we can know a lot about the behavior of the animals. So one of the things that's been really interesting looking back at last summer was looking at some of the hottest days of the summer and looking at which days led to decreases in feed consumption. And you can see a really strong correlation between those two peak days of the last summer and how much feed the animals were eating. So if you have a decrease in consumption like that, but it's not correlated to something that you already know, then it's time to go and investigate and figure out what's causing that decrease in consumption. So that could be an illness, that could be a behavior issue. There's lots of different causes, but it really gives you a strong signal that something's up and you should be taking a look.
Right. No, that's great. I think this this type of technology, you know, going forward is going to help people like myself, veterinarians, because, you know, there's not a lot of time perhaps in a finisher barn that a caretaker is there, right? You know, they come every day and check in on the pigs, et cetera, but they've got other chores to do in other barns. So to detect those things via data or computer system, I think is going to be key for, you know, the next 10 years, right? That's the new technology, the new frontier.
Yeah, definitely. It's just an extra set of eyes. So we know that caregivers are really crucial to having well-raised animals and healthy animals, but this is just like an extra layer. So, you know, if you're busy dealing with, you know, a pig that's pulled a water spout off of its pen and you don't notice across the barn that there's another problem happening, we want to be able to help catch those situations.
Exactly. So I'm going to dig in a little bit about this sort of the data that comes from this system. So how does it work then to like do feed ordering? Would this system be able to, you know, key into the caretaker on being able to go back to the feed mill and maybe have some sort of a recipe, I guess, so to speak, on I'm going to need feed in this bin because it's used up this much, you know, feed?
Yeah, so what we actually do is we create a virtual feed desk, and that's basically a dashboard showing every day for the next 2 weeks. And when the feed levels drop below a certain level, we will recommend an order. And so that order recommendation can either be something that your feed mill is looking at directly, or if there's a someone in between you and your feed mill, then you can show them that interface, and then they can place the orders through that system. So we want to be able to help people without needing to do too much integration or too much upfront work, so that they can try it out. And then if they want to, they can go over to full automation where the system is being looked at by their feed mill and the feed orders are being really just taken right from the data to action without needing any other human steps.
Right, exactly. So kind of this interoperability. Tell me if a system or a customer is using, let's say, a different app to do feed ordering. Maybe it's an app that their feed mill has, right? That they have to go in and do this feed order. Is there a way to connect those two? And I think that's what you're trying to get at here is the adaptability, right, of this system to be able to connect to an already built database or system that somebody else is using.
So what we do is we provide an API, so an application programming interface, and that essentially lets our customers get full access to the data that is stored, that's their data, but just stored inside of our system. And so what we do with that is we are able to then connect that data to any feed mill software that you have or any other systems you need to work with, so long as those systems also support interoperability.
Right. And that's really key, right? Because this is this area, this space with sensors and data coming out of the barn, you know, whether it's temperature, humidity, feed, it's all getting very sophisticated. But there's a lot of different companies working on maybe a small sensor that's, you know, just for water flow, right? And so getting those all connected, our experience or my experience has been that's a little bit harder than it sounds, because typically we're not computer scientists that are working in that space, right, in the pig barn. So this is great that we're starting out with this conversation with your company, because I think you understand how important that connection is.
Yeah, I really it's a really exciting thing when you can take all these different sensors that are out there on the market and then try to combine them together to get all the data that you need. So you want to make sure that any sensor that you pick is going to allow you to use your data and kind of harness it and use it to the most effect and create the most value.
Absolutely.
Feed is a fomite for swine viruses, and studies have shown that specific ingredients matrices can enhance virus survival. Preventing virus transmissions through contaminated feed is achievable with proper protocols in place. Preventing ASF infection with a 3500 sow operation can save an operation $60.5 million. Feed sanitation ensures that clean feed moves throughout feed production and remains pathogen-free until consumption. Both Terminate and Finio have been evaluated against viruses and found to be effective in reducing the viral load in feed and preventing clinical disease. Contact a clean feed expert to learn more today.
So I know we can't talk about data and sharing that without talking about security, right? Security of that data and whether it's safe for maybe me to merge some of the feed flow data on feed intake with some mortality and gain data and financial closeouts. So tell me about the security part. And you don't have to, this is kind of your area of expertise, right? The computer scientist. So should we be worried about that? And how do we get over that worry?
Yeah. It's a healthy worry to have. But I think what's really important is to, just do a little bit to get educated about how to keep your data secure and how to make sure that the companies that you're working with are also treating your data carefully. So one of the great things about interoperability is that you can find open standards that other people have built and have tested and tried in lots of different places. So when it comes to making sure that your data is secure, if you are working with a new company and they have a way of accessing your data, you can look for some of those open standards, like using encryption and using strong authentication methods to be able to make sure that your data is kept safely inside of their systems. And then I think there's another kind of really interesting aspect to this. If you're working with one company and all of your data is stored with that service provider or that technology partner, The problem can be is that they have access to all of the data about your business. And that might make you feel like you're in a compromised position where they have this extra amount of information about you and are able to use that data to build new products on top of. But if you pick many different technology partners that are all supporting interoperability, you can pull all that data into your own systems, and then you become the only person who has every key of the puzzle. So you are the only one who has water, mortality, the price that you got for your pigs, and you can store that in your own system that you can keep safe rather than trusting one other entity to hold all that information for you.
Right. And that then becomes really powerful data, right, in a business to really be able to analyze and connect all of those pieces.
Yeah, absolutely.
So really exciting stuff going forward in the terms of data.
Yeah, being able to cross-reference those data sets is where they become like truly valuable and powerful.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with that. So tell me about, I wonder about the storage of the data, right? Like, so how is this? Is this something that's, you know, over time going to be so many data points and so much data that we aren't going to be able to store it, or, you know, we're going to have problems connecting to it, you know, like you said, with all this other data in your, you know, again, this is your area and I don't get a chance to talk to computer scientists in the space of pig production much. So what about that? You know, are we going to run out of storage?
Oh, that's a great question. So this reminds me of kind of a prophecy that was made a long time ago about how what would happen to the cost of storing data. And really what we've seen over time is that the price of storing data goes down and down and down over time, and it's really approaching zero. And companies that have realized this, like Google actually, realized that the cost of data was really about to go to zero and just stored as much data as possible, that really has been the winning move for quite some time. And there are lots of technical solutions to take data from its live state where it's accessible right away. That's more expensive. And then to store that data into cold storage, which means that it's less accessible, but it's cheaper to store. And so there's been a lot of technological developments to be able to make it so we can hold on to more and more data. And I'd recommend that everyone really captures as much historical data as possible, because that's how you learn about trends, and trends really become the way that you can make future predictions.
No, that's good to know. And, as a veterinarian, health data, right? I can look back at, 10, 20 years ago, we didn't have some of the data for some of the diseases really very accessible. And certainly, a pathology report is, on paper and it's a PDF and, not very useful when you're looking at disease evolution really is over a long period of time. And so we're getting more sophisticated at understanding that. And I think that's really exciting as well.
Yeah, exactly.
So don't worry about data storage. We should keep it all.
I understand that feeling, though. That's a very common kind of common thought to have, is like, oh, am I going to just have way too much data? And really, we've created such good systems to store it that it's not too much of an issue.
Yeah, great. So how about the other side of that? How do we analyze all of it? So, let's talk about taking this data from feed flow and, historically, let's say, we know that we had this many feed outages and, this was the temperature and the hot weather, right? So you have intake that goes down. And so those are really, one is a seasonal, right, prediction over time and, over 5 to 10 seasons, maybe there's a way that we can utilize some of that data to help us, build curves and model, right, some better tools to keep pigs hungry, and keep the barns cooler. But how do we analyze all of that data? What's your suggestion? What do we use for that?
Yeah, so I think that it's really important for people like yourself with subject matter expertise to get right into the data that we have, which really means learning a couple of new skills to be able to take the data that you have in a database, which is just rows and rows and not very easy to understand, and then turn that into visualizations. And so visualizations are a great way of building insights based on subject matter expertise. So that might let you look at, feed consumption and barn temperature and be able to, just visually understand that there's a correlation between the two in certain extreme circumstances. And that can be great for making better management decisions in the next group of animals that come along. then the next thing that you can do is you can work to turn those visual or those insights into triggers. So that would mean that when you see a pattern coming up that you want to make a change, where you'd want to change what you're doing, that allows you to get a notification or start a new process. So you have to be able to recognize the changing pattern. So when you look at a chart and you easily see something with your human eyes and your human brain, you're really doing very complex pattern recognition. And so that's where machine learning comes in, because you can't look at every chart for every barn, and you can train a computer to see these patterns. And when it says, oh, hey, I see a problem coming, then you can automatically let the right people know and they can make changes to the barn environment or try to treat those animals to get better results.
Yeah, I think that machine learning is, you know, a little bit scary, right? Because you kind of feel, or at least I feel like, what if it's wrong? What if, you know, I had training, I went to school, I went to lectures, right? The old traditional way of learning. And so it's a little bit scary to, you know, can I trust it? But I think it's the way that we're going to be able to sift through all of this data and really make meaningful sense out of it.
Yeah, it's really important to think about what happens when the opposite of what you want to have happen happens, right? So when you're building a test, I'm sure a lot of people in your audience have a statistics background from the animal health side of things and know about sensitivity and specificity, or true positives, false positives, and true negatives and false negatives. But what essentially it means is that you know when you're building a system that sometimes you're going to be wrong, and you need to think through the consequences of that. So just because you see a decrease in animal consumption doesn't mean that you should go and start treating with a particular medication, because, for instance, you might be wrong. So maybe the next step is really to get a human set of eyes on it to be able to make a deeper investigation before making a decision.
Yeah, exactly. So it doesn't replace the veterinarian or the nutritionist or the computer scientist. It just helps us, right, to make our job easier, to sift through all of this in one make the triggers so that this is normal, this is normal. Oh, this is not normal. What happened here?
Oh, I just think about it as being a way to scale people's expertise and make it so that you can take the things that you've learned and then apply them to in a number of animals that a single person couldn't just see themselves.
You know, I'm learning about this sort of artificial intelligence, and whether it's ChatGPT or what other, there's other systems, right, is my understanding. So how do you recommend a person like me, or my peers, or nutritionists, et cetera, in our industry, how do we get educated on how to use these tools?
Oh, that's a great question. So one of the great things about computer programming is that everyone who does computer programming loves to talk about it and loves to share. So you're going to find lots of resources online where people show their work and show the way that they've applied machine learning to different data sets. So you might need to look into other industries for inspiration. Like you might want to start looking at people who are looking at stock prices and start to use that sort of time series data to inspire what you could do with pigs or with livestock. Now, I think it's really important to choose a set of tools to use. So there are a few common ones that I'm sure people know about. So there's things like Power BI or Tableau, which create visualizations. And now with the boom in machine learning, are also getting into the space of being able to detect those sorts of patterns and then help you make decisions using those. Personally, I learned Python, which is a very generalizable computer programming language. And I use that with a tool that is for research that's called Jupyter Notebooks. And Jupyter Notebooks is like a research notebook that combines code, the visualizations from that code, and then your findings. So it really lets you create a shareable notebook at the end that shows, hey, I did an investigation into this topic. Here was my hypothesis. Here's the data that supports it. And here's what I think we should do next. So that sort of approach, I think, is really positive. And there's a lot of open tools that let you do that. So the reason why I like Jupyter Notebooks is because it's actually a system that is designed to be interoperable and run in many different places, whereas Power BI and Tableau are proprietary systems that are, really run by one company.
Yeah, and I've had that experience where we want to utilize, something from the diagnostic lab, that has some of our data, but we use a different system. We might use Power BI and they use Tableau. And so it's been challenging to try to get those to kind of talk to each other, you know, and then you get used to a little bit of the intricacies of a graph or a chart in one system, and it might be different in the other.
Yeah.
That goes back to the same discussion, right, of interoperable.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's that sort of when you have data in different silos, it can really limit what you're able to do. And I think that's a great example of when you have it in one system and you're working with another group that holds another piece of the puzzle, but you just can't get them to work together. And that can be really frustrating.
So tell me about the I'm going to just ask some questions about this artificial learning. So as a scientist, you know, we pride ourselves in trying to make sure that we're reading and utilizing, you know, peer-reviewed articles, you know, that have good science behind them or have good statistics that, you know, that you can really trust the data. So how do we sort that out in this machine learning, you know, space? Is there some sites that are better than others at sifting through the data that's not just opinion, but that's actually, you know, more published research?
So when you're talking about learning things from a large language model like ChatGPT or some of the other systems that are out there, you do have to be very careful, because really what you're looking at is just the next predicted word that it thinks makes the most sense. And you can really get into situations where you think that you're reading something from like an on high, all-knowing artificial intelligence, but really it's actually just making things up. And so it's really important to be skeptical about the things that you receive back from a large language model. And I think people are starting to learn that as they experiment with them and try them themselves. So I don't think that the place to start with machine learning for the agriculture industry is to say, how should I raise my pigs better, and have ChatGPT give you the answer to that question. There's definitely going to be applications for large language AI. But I think what's really interesting for people in this field is that you can think of the data that you collect, the sensor data that you collect, similarly to how a large language model works. So we've all heard about how large language models need to collect large amounts of data about human speech and human writing to be able to predict the next possible thing. And so what we can do with data from pigs is actually take that sensor data and train a large language model that's going to predict out what the most likely outcome is next. And so that can give us a little bit of a future understanding of what could be happening. But when it comes to validating those models, it's really important to hold on to those statistical ideas that you learned, you know, and for me, it was stats 1000 and 2000. That is where you really prove out if something is truly meaningful and valuable. And so you can take that data, you can project it out into the future, but it's really important to backdate all of that and to use past data to see, was it actually correct? Is it, how trustworthy is it? And it won't just be a yes or no answer. It won't be perfect or terrible. It's going to be somewhere in the middle. And then you're going to have to make a decision about whether or not that intelligence is worth it to be able to make decisions in your business.
Yeah, that was great. Casey, you made me feel a little bit better about those, you know, concerns that I have. And, you know, having people like you to, you know, help us to work together, right? To help us understand how to utilize these tools that's going to make us better, but still keep the science and keep the integrity, you know, in as well. So, no, that's great. That you've explained it really great.
Yeah, it's a really huge opportunity. So I think that people are right to be a little bit concerned, because it's going to change the way that the world works. But at the same time, I think that we can hold on to those core scientific ideas and use it effectively.
Yeah, exactly. So we are going to kind of concluding our time together with Casey today. But before we sign off, do you have any final, you know, words of wisdoms or take homes that you want to share, kind of to sum up our conversation?
I think for people in the livestock industry, what's really important is to stay adaptable and to choose technologies that keep you nimble and able to change direction quickly. So if you pick technologies that are open to let you use your data the way you want to, then I think that there is a lot of opportunity. So the way I think about it is that the future is always evolving in front of us, and it doesn't just arrive in a fully finished state. And so if you keep yourself nimble, then you're going to be able to take advantage of things like AI and machine learning and then apply it and use it as quickly as possible, which is really what makes it all exciting.
Ah, that's a great summary. So if you have questions for Casey, comments about our show, send those to us on the podcast platform. And also, if you like our show, give us a thumbs up or a like. We always enjoy seeing those. So now, as you know, Casey, we have three questions that we ask all of our guests, just to get to know them a little bit better, a little bit outside of the topic that we're talking about. So
it's time for our famous three. An animal nutrition technology company offering innovative products and new applications for the swine industry. The combination of AB Vista enzymes, technical services, and nutrition expertise provides the industry with new opportunities to further improve production efficiencies. Fiber is receiving renewed interest due to its influence on the microbiome, and AB Vista has brought together research experts to discuss the industry's knowledge of fiber functionality and to introduce a stimbiotic targeted to improve fiber digestion. To request access, contact NAM at abvista.com. That's NAM at abvista.com. We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible. MetaFarms, transforming agriculture with data-driven solutions for pork producers. SUNY, we provide value-added biotech solutions. Eastman works with you to accelerate your nutritional program innovation. Trow Nutrition North America. Everything we do is driven by passion and backed by science. AccuFast. The best way to predict the future is to create it. Start creating your future today at AccuFastSwine.com. Digesterom Finish from DSM Firmenich can help your pigs finish faster. Get better efficiency with improved profitability with Digesterom Finish.
The first one is, what's your favorite book or resource that you use in your area of expertise? What's your go-to?
I love the answer of a book, so I'm going to go with that. So I really like The Goal. So The Goal is all about manufacturing and about creating systems that have constraints inside of them. And when I started to think about the livestock industry through the language from that book, it really helped me understand the sort of trade-off decisions we need to make when we design livestock systems. So The Goal is, definitely my favorite.
Ah, great. I haven't read that one. We'll put it on the list. So how about something outside computer science or in, you know, your current job in an ag field? What about something else? You know, what's a go-to or just some advice for the listeners on maybe a book or a resource they should check out?
Oh, definitely. Okay. I can always get stuck into that business mindset, right? So I think my next favorite book, I think probably is, I'm going to say Dune. I really enjoyed reading it when I was young. Really exciting to see the film adaptations of it coming out now. That's always been a fun series for me. Really intense and makes me go back and reread things all the time, but I really enjoy it.
Yeah, that's good. I did see that there's, you know, they redid it, right? They redid the movie recently on Dune. So that gave me a blast from the past because, I was in grade school when it first came out.
Yeah, what's old is new again.
Great. So the last one is, share with us an attribute or characteristic that you feel sets a successful professional apart from others.
So there's this phrase that I was taught a long time ago that really influenced the way that I work with other people. And it's called imagining people complexly. And what that really means is, especially when you're frustrated with someone, when you're having like a professional conflict, is to think about people as fully complex humans like you are yourself. So sometimes what can happen is when you're having a conflict, you'll think of someone like a caricature. You'll say, oh, they're out to get me, or they just want to hurt me, or they want to, or they're evil. And those small ways of thinking of people really lead to bad decisions. And so I like to think about people as complex and as rich as I am. And I think that may helps me make better decisions.
That's very insightful. I hadn't thought about it that way. So no, great advice.
Yeah, that one's really helped me a lot. It's been really important for me.
Good. Well, Casey, thank you so much for being our guest today. Again, this is Casey Forsyth. He's with FeedFlow, and I've enjoyed our time together.
Yeah, thanks so much. This was a ton of fun. I really appreciate it.
Looking to elevate your brand and captivate audiences through the power of podcasting? Look no further. Introducing the custom podcast brought to you by Wisemetics, where we take care of the behind the scenes so that you can focus on what truly matters. Podcasting has become an invaluable tool for brand awareness, but let's face it, putting it into practice can be a daunting task. It's incredibly time-consuming and requires technical know-how. But don't worry, we've got you covered. With our experienced team at the helm, we'll handle the operational aspects so you can channel your energy into what your company does best. Are you ready to unleash the podcasting potential of your company? Schedule a call with one of our specialists today at the link in the bottom of this episode. You'll also receive a free podcast strategy consult tailored to the unique needs and goals of your business. We'll